Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. There has obviously been a ton of talk about how AI is going to change the world, how powerful it is. And if you're a programmer, you're probably aware, even if you're not a programmer, you're probably aware that it's able to write code and help people program. And there's always been the promise that you could use it to create impressive apps and programs that dramatically helped your business. But not a lot of people have done that, with the exception of today's guest. That's Zach Plansky. He is the owner of AT3Tactical.com, a business in the firearms and tactical space. And he had an incredible post in the private community for E-Commerce Fuel, where he talked about how he saved about $150,000 in software licensing fees by designing his own tool to help with inventory planning, management, and forecasting. And this is not just a basic piece of software. This is a fully functional, deeply customized, very sophisticated tool that he built in a little over a month with no programming experience. And this is where I start to get excited, because the possibilities of being able to do this for businesses like that we have are just astounding. There's so many implications for being able to be more effective, productive, save money, replace wildly expensive SaaS software stack. Anyway, so we go into depth about why he did this, how he did this, the different tech stack that he used, recommendations he has. The beginning of it is a little more high level to give you a sense of what's possible. If you want to stick with us in the middle, we get technical and geeky and really talk about the specifics and go deep. But anyway, I love this one. And I think this area is just, there's so much potential here for business owners in small to medium-sized niche businesses to be able to just massively increase their productivity and what they can do with software tools and programming. Very cool. The costs are coming down dramatically. And I had a lot of fun talking with Zach about it and really appreciated his willingness to open up. So hope you enjoy this one, and we're going to get right into it. Zach, we were just talking. The last time you were on the show was 2019, for less exciting reasons. I think you had just got banned on Amazon. We were talking through that whole process. Are you feeling better? Is the Amazon ban lifted? Give us an update 6 years later here.
Yeah, luckily that didn't last for too long. And actually, I'm feeling a lot better now. I'm excited to have a fun podcast this time.
And not the angst, the existential angst of the business potentially collapsing. And are you still selling on Amazon?
Yeah, we are actually. So because we're in the firearms industry, we can only sell a subset of our products on there, but still going strong.
Well, before we dive in, I want to give you just a big thank you for two things. One, you have been such a phenomenal member over the years. I always enjoy chatting with you, albeit always briefly at events because there's so much going on. Your contributions in the forums, just everything you add to the community has been just amazing. So thank you for being a phenomenal member and such an integral part of the community over the years. And then also for this post, I mean, it takes a lot of time to write something like this up and share it. But as I teased at the top of the episode, like, you are one of, if not the first person I've known to go deep down the rabbit hole in what a lot of us have wanted to do, but have not taken the time to do it, and build an AI app, a meaningfully customized one that has a real impact on your business. So thanks for being willing to, inspired me to do some things, and a lot of other people too. So thank you and kudos on both those. Maybe we could start with talking about, what was the catalyst for creating this custom program? What was kind of going on in your business from an inventory perspective where you said, hey, I need something different?
Yeah, maybe backing up a little bit. So I've always liked doing like custom tools within my company. And what that's, I don't know how to code. So maybe that was a missed opportunity in my education, because I like technical stuff, but it was really, whether it be spreadsheets for stuff like inventory planning or automations within the business stuff, that's always kind of been a passion of mine. And I think it's benefited our company a lot. But, and also my background is really, before I started my company, my background was more in supply chain and operations and stuff like that. I had some jobs to that effect before starting my company. Yeah, the catalyst though was, as our company has grown, I think one thing I've actually noticed a lot in the ECF forums is that a lot of companies seem to struggle with inventory planning. So like forecasting stuff, figuring out how much they're going to need. There's not really a lot of software out there that does a great job. I know there are some, you know, there are ones that get brought up in the forums. Some of them are only for Shopify. We're not on Shopify. There's kind of a little bit of a lack, I would say, in that area. The specific problem to be solved there would be, we don't just need to know when we need to order something. We need to know more into the future of, say, some items that have long lead times or stuff like that. So it's come up a lot in the forums. I ended up actually digging through the forums first before I started working on this, just to see what kinds of software was out there. But yeah, I guess to specifically answer the question of why, we were struggling with our inventory going up kind of unsustainably, like inventory climbing faster than our revenue was. Also just trying to reduce out of stocks. We have a lot of SKUs in our company. I think we're up to like 9,000 or something. And when things go out of stock, you obviously can't sell them. So big thing that we track within our company. So I started looking around in the forums. I actually ended up talking to one or two people in the forums about this that had mentioned some software that they liked or things like that. And I started demoing some software. But what I quickly found was that everything was really expensive and really difficult to implement. It's kind of a weird area of business where the solutions have to be really kind of customized to what you need, and they have a lot of implementation costs. So meanwhile, I spend too much time on Twitter and I'm seeing people talk about how they're doing all these cool things coding with AI. So I thought, you know, maybe there's a way that I could try to do this myself. So it was actually right after, I think, Black Friday, roughly, I started poking around, trying to figure out if I might be able to build my own tool. And long story short, we did.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned in the forums, one of the options you were looking at was like, it was going to be 150K over like 3 or 4 years, and still didn't necessarily do all the things that you wanted it to. So what do you have? What kind of, maybe we can fast forward to the very end and kind of then fill in the gaps throughout the rest of the episode. But where are you now? 100 and, you know, after all the time and energy you put into, what's the tool that you have now? What does it do? And kind of paint people a picture for how it's impacted your business.
Yeah. So we use Finale Inventory as our inventory management system, and we love it. Unfortunately, that's more of the kind of operational day-to-day stuff. So basically what I ended up building was something that connected with Finale, because Finale has all of the relevant data, how much stock we have on every SKU, how many we sold during, you know, these different time periods, supplier information, all that good stuff, purchase orders, when they're arriving. So we're continuing to use Finale in the same way, but what now we have is a separate system that's more of a long-term, we call it the stock planner. Basically, the idea is it's showing us a long-term picture on every SKU that we have, and it'll show things that we couldn't see before. So for example, we do some in-house manufacturing, and that can be very difficult to plan the, you know, if you have subcomponents of something, you need to know when to order those too. It addresses all that stuff, showing us really true demand, including what we need for manufacturing. That's a big part of it. Creating a big part of this too is being able to create a seasonality adjusted forecast, which is part of this tool. Does a bunch of other things too, like predicting when items will go out of stock, so we can potentially react to that early, because sometimes our products that we order may have maybe even a 120-day lead time. So now we can see if we may need to pull that purchase order up and expedite it or something like that, which was something that we really couldn't see before. You know, essentially what it is just a standalone application. My ops team uses it primarily. I'm looking in it quite a bit, but the purchasing people are using it daily.
You spent about 150 hours over 40 days doing this. I think you had mentioned it, like, even in 2 months, your excess inventory has been reduced. Your out of stock lost revenue has gone down or up, I guess, depending on how you want to measure it, but in a positive direction. So a huge win, especially if you can compare it to what you were going to pay six figures for that software that still wasn't custom tailored like a glove to your business. Before we get into the mechanics, the super geeky analysis of like different chat, you know, LLM models and Replit and Cursor and all these things that you could use, I think one of the bigger questions is, how do you, you're the owner, you have a ton going on, you've got a family, you've got a team, probably stretched for bandwidth like most people listening. How do you carve out 150 hours over 40 days, which is effectively like half of your working hours to do something like this? How hard was that? Did you just make it a priority? Do you already have a really fine-tuned business already, and so it wasn't that difficult, or was that a big challenge?
I wish that were the case. Actually, there's a few things that go into this. So one I would give a shout out to is EOS, the Traction EOS model. We follow that pretty closely. So we've been using that for a long time. And part of that is setting quarterly rocks. So essentially, I made this one of my quarterly rocks, which in some ways gives it me permission to spend a lot of time on it. And I won't take things, I try to be careful not to take things on unless I think I can get them done. So in this instance, it was my main focus for about a quarter. I didn't quite get it done in that period, as you mentioned, but it was close. So that'd be one thing. The other thing is, frankly, I just worked a lot. These types of challenges are very interesting to me. So, I mean, I was definitely working late sometimes, but I do track my time. So my estimate of the amount of time it took was pretty accurate, but I would say that was the second thing. And the third thing is, I mean, with the EOS model, we have a leadership team. I'm the CEO. I certainly have stuff that I need to do, but, you know, most things are handled day to day by my leadership team. You know, not a ton of stuff comes to me that's urgent.
And you are a technical person. You understand technology really well. You've got a deep experience, you know, background in supply chain, but you're not a programmer per se, right? So starting this out, you've never programmed in languages. That was not a asset you brought to this project.
That is correct. I wish I did, but I wish I knew how, but I don't. So maybe messed around with a little bit of stuff in college, but that's it.
Do you feel like at the end of this, having watched so much code get generated, seeing the changes that got made by AI, do you feel like you've got a pretty good understanding, even if you couldn't sit down and hammer out the code from scratch, that you can kind of go through the code and understand what's going on?
Yeah, I would say so. It's actually an interesting question because I was just thinking about that. I would say I can read code now better, and specifically Python, because that was what this project was built with. You know, I can tell what's going on in there. You almost have to learn a little bit of that. I definitely wouldn't be able to write the software myself. I mean, not even close. There's no way. But definitely can kind of at least follow what's going on to some extent.
You talk about working a lot. I was, like I mentioned, you inspired me. I've got a few ideas. I want to create my own custom apps for stuff. And as I was like chatting with one of the LLMs and thinking through scope and tools, I could just envision myself getting into this and having it be like 11:30 at night and being like, oh my gosh, how did time, like, because you get into these things, did you get into a flow state where you would just be programming, making changes, seeing it kind of come alive? The fluidity, I'm guessing, at least at times with LLM pair programming, yeah, did time just kind of disappear? Was this a fun project to do?
Yes, yeah, for sure. I mean, what you're describing is basically what I was doing. I mean, it's not like I was staying up late every night because I'm old and get tired. But that said, it's fun. So I think there's a lot of fun. I think probably the most satisfying thing would just be like the beginning of it, especially too, because you're taking an idea and turning it into something that starts to have a little bit of promise, right? So it's like, oh, wow, this one thing, you know, you got to kind of break these up in pieces. It's like, wow, this first piece actually works. And not only that, but, you know, at least with my rudimentary understanding of what's going on in the code, it seems like it's pretty good too. So, and, you know, which it turns out LLMs actually can write very good code. They do have other limitations, but I think that's one thing that they're very good at.
Before talking about what the tech side of me just wants to immediately jump to all the tools. But before we do, foundational issues, this is a fairly meaningful app. You got a lot of things going on. How much time did you spend thinking through like the foundation, the different data structures, how you wanted it to work, like the pre-engineering, I guess you could say, or a spec doc? How much thought went into that? Or was that something you kind of created on the fly as you programmed?
So worth mentioning, we have a two-person dev team at my company, and they're mainly, so we're on WooCommerce. They mainly do stuff in WooCommerce, but they can do other stuff too. And we've certainly, you know, they've built some internal tools. I made the decision to not have them work on this project because I wasn't 100% clear on what I needed. I had I don't even know if this would make any sense, but it's like I had a vision of what I wanted at the end, but I didn't really know how we were going to get there. And I knew that if I would have given this to them, as good as they are, they would have struggled because it was a little bit too creative probably, and not as much on the dev side at the beginning. So with that in mind, I guess to answer your question, step one was actually, I just needed to figure out if I thought this was feasible. So I did start building out like one part without really putting a lot of, you know, overall plan together, that type of thing. But after I could see that this was seeming like it was working, I very quickly had to go back and make a spec document for the project. And actually what that ended up being was, I looked, 7 pages long. It took me a whole day to put it together. And basically what it was more than just like, here's what we need from the project. It was more like if you were onboarding a new employee, maybe, or somebody who was going to work on this, you know, it's like, here's all the information about our company. We have these SKUs. We have these kinds of suppliers. Here are the metrics that we track that we're trying to improve. Here's the reason why we're doing this project. I just put it together in like a PowerPoint, but then I just put it into text. And what I ended up using that for was, especially at the beginning, but basically for the whole project, that was part of the prompt every single time. And it was long. I mean, it was 7 pages long, but I think that gave context for the AI model to be able to, you know, it's scanning through that each time. And it's like, oh, they have 9,000 products. So we are going to have to accommodate that, you know, whatever. So I think that was very helpful.
Let's talk through the tech stack that you used. You used Replit or Replit, ChatGPT 01, a MySQL database, and Retool. When I think Replit, I think of, you know, kind of an all-in-one, you can program in there, it can host the app, it can kind of be a virtual environment for running everything. But I believe you just use Replit for hosting the app and less for coding. Is that correct?
No, not quite. So actually what's funny about this is a part where anybody who does know how to, like, is a software developer is going to start cringing, because I'm going to probably explain this poorly. But I kept hearing people talk about Replit and how cool it was, and I really had no idea what it did. But it's like, I think I need that. The code needs to go somewhere. But the gist of this would be, I think I can explain it pretty well in a non-technical way. So typically developers, when they're working on a project like this, will set up a local development environment on their computer. So they've got their IDE, which is a fancy word for their code editor. And then they have to install, for example, you have to install Python on your computer. You have to install these different packages that you're using on your computer. Replit, what it does is it gives a cloud-based, it basically does that in the cloud. So you don't have to install anything on your computer. You just kind of, it kind of automates the setup of that part of it, which was way over my head. So it was good that it does that. But basically what it gives you is a functioning environment that you can code in, and then you can run the code just like it's running on your computer when you're testing it. And then you can actually, if you want to, you can deploy it when it's done, and it can just keep running it forever if that's what you need. But most people tend to use Replit for the development side, you know, before it's done. It's kind of a great place to quickly spool something up, write the code, test it. And then I should mention, Replit also has some built-in AI tools. I haven't really used them. I have one that's pretty cool, actually. It's called Replit Agent. And you just tell it to build an app, and it will like just start cranking away on it. And it's kind of a toy, in my opinion, though I do think it's getting better. It wouldn't have worked for this project, but you can make simple games in it or things like that, and it will literally make it end-to-end and test itself and keep fixing bugs and all that on its own. So Replit does a few things, but that was mainly where I was running code and writing it.
And there's a lot of other tools that are similar. There's Replit, there's Retool, there's Cursor, there's Copilot with GitHub and others. And one thing that, as I'm thinking about projects, I've been asking, I've put a very high level spec doc in and say, hey, give me your recommendations for the top two types of tools to use for this. And it'll kind of crank through the pros and cons of different ones. They all have their own strengths and weaknesses, but a lot of options out there with different use cases. You though, Zach, you were using ChatGPT 01 Pro, because Replit also has, like you said, AI tools where you can say, hey, do this for me here, program this, add this, fix this. And the AI interface in Replit will go through and then make those changes to the code base. But I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you were using ChatGPT 01 Pro for writing the code and then pasting it back in to Replit. Why do that versus just do it natively in Replit?
when I started the project, the O1 Pro wasn't even out yet. So that's how fast things are changing. Like, I think it came out like 2 weeks after I started the project. But so I started, I was using just ChatGPT, whatever their best model was at the time. And it got me to a certain point. And then what I started to find was that once you'd start working with longer files, maybe after like 200 lines of code, it would just start, you would ask it to change something or make some feature, and it would add the feature, but it would remove a bunch of other stuff that you needed. And really what it came down to is it wasn't powerful enough. It'll kind of always do what you tell it to do, but it won't always maintain things correctly. So then I switched to using Claude actually for a little while, which was great. I was using it in the interface. Claude has an interface you can work in. And I thought that was great, but I kept running into limits. They were really heavily limiting how much it could be used per day. And it was just very frustrating. I would run through the limit in an hour in the day. So I could have gotten more Claude accounts, I guess. But what I ended up, well, then O1 Pro came out and I started testing it. And I was pretty blown away by how good it was. The big downside of it is it's very slow. So it can sometimes think for 3 minutes or something like that. But the big advantage of it is it's really accurate. I've found that it doesn't ever really break things. It's just, it's kind of more cautious. It won't change things unless it knows it'll work. I do follow a lot of people that are doing stuff on Twitter, things like that. And a lot of people are using, the big one now is Cursor using Claude as the model. So Cursor being the desktop app that you have that you code in, and then Claude is the AI model that's integrated with it. I still would maintain, I mean, I've used it. I still think O1 Pro is more powerful, but I think you can really, I think the best thing to do is to try using several models in conjunction. So in other words, if you have something that's really complicated, O1 Pro might be the best, but it'll take a while. If you just need to update a little bit of something because there's an error message or whatever, Claude could do that, or really any AI model at this point, and they're faster.
When you're using O1 Pro with Replit, does Replit allow you to, via API or via some kind of login, be able to use the O1 Pro LLM model within the Replit interface? Or are you kind of toggling between windows, and is O1 Pro, does it have your entire code base in its context and you're just working from that?
No. So that's the key limitation at this point. But thankfully, I found a guy on Twitter. His name is McKay Wrigley. That's his Twitter username. I got a lot out of actually a post he had made because he showed how he was doing this. So basically what he did and what I ended up doing was make a little script, of course, using ChatGPT to do it for you, that exports all of your code base into a text file. Essentially, the way that it worked, the one that I made, I also put in that document that I mentioned earlier that was the context for the project. So every time that I started a new chat, let's say, or started working on a new feature, all I had to do was basically click a button. It would aggregate all the code into text along with and create the prompt. And then you just paste that into O1 Pro along with whatever you're asking it to do. And so it is a little copy-pasty, but honestly, that is not the slowest part of the process. So it really wasn't much of an impediment.
So you'd go through, Zach, and you'd make those changes, and then O1 would pretty much say, hey, go ahead and make these changes in Replit and you can update. So a little copy-pasty, but not too bad. Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Brett, who's the owner of Microfiber Wholesale. He's been a part of e-commerce fuel since the very beginning, one of the OGs, and a really cool guy. Has an avocado farm, travels in a van with his family, and just great guy. And here's what he has to say about his experience with e-commerce fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure owners.
I've been a member of ECF since 2014, and in that time, I think we crossed the 7-figure mark in revenue, and I've also crossed the 8-figure mark. And ECF is a huge part of that growth, because I've been able to access a network of business owners and create friendships and go really deep. But really, what ECF has provided for me is the ability to have somebody that's been through whatever I'm struggling with, or I can bounce an idea off of or get new ideas from. There's always somebody that I can turn to that's been there and done that, that can help walk me through whatever issue we're dealing with or idea we have for growth. And that's really where the value comes. It's just building, for me, it's been building my business network, just having people that I can reach out to with any issue that I've got going on in my business or personally. It's been pretty amazing for that. And I always tell people the most valuable thing that I have as a business owner is my network. And most of that has come from e-commerce fuel.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7 or 8 figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. One of the things that sounds most intimidating to me is dealing with databases. Like, I feel like I have a working knowledge of programming. I've done a little bit, can figure that out. The database integrations, like a MySQL database, that sounds harder. And the data manipulation, importing, all that kind of stuff. So I guess, very high level question, but was that a pretty difficult part of this process, managing the data and the database and the data cleaning?
So yes and no. I guess what I would say, this was a very data heavy project. And ultimately, the majority of the value that's being created and what I worked on was what's being put into the database, meaning creating a forecast, for example, from historical sales and usage data. You know, that's a kind of a data manipulation thing, using a forecast algorithm, whatever. So very data heavy project. And on top of that, it was importing data from Finale and then needing to potentially clean it up or, you know, make certain changes to the data, aggregate the data. So there's a lot going on the data side. So yes, that probably actually was the hardest part, honestly. But I would say that working with SQL data is one of the things that LLMs actually are the best at, in my opinion. And I guess one thing I didn't mention was, on the script that I used to aggregate for pasting the code base that we were just talking about, I also had it document the tables in the database. So basically what that meant was it would list all of the tables that were being used along with the structure of the tables and a sample of the data, like 5 lines of data. So that way the LLM always had context of what was in all of these tables and how they were structured and stuff like that. What I would say is, if you take a sample of data from a database, say 10 lines of data, including the headers, and paste it into an LLM, literally any of them, and ask it to make you a query to do really anything, no matter how complicated it is, it'll almost always get it right in the first shot. So they're very good at that.
Was the database also hosted in Replit? Like, is it all hosted in that environment?
No, I don't think you can with Replit. Actually, they have a built-in database that you can use. We had a separate kind of server that we use for data that has some databases in it for some stuff that we use, like supplier integrations and stuff like that. And that was all stuff that my dev team does. But we basically had a database server. So I definitely leaned on my developers to help me with, like, okay, I need you to set me up a database. And after a little bit, that part got a lot easier. The key tool there to point out would be, so we're using MySQL. That's what we use. So there's something called PHP MyAdmin, which is basically just a database UI. So you can go into the user interface, you can see all the tables, you can run your queries in there for testing if you want. Can even modify stuff in the tables. And I'm sure every different database type has their own kind of, you know, interface like that. But one thing that's really cool with at least with PHP MyAdmin is that it makes it really easy. You can just copy a data sample straight from the database and paste it into an LLM. So it's really not that hard.
You are also using Retool, which is maybe in the same ballpark as Replit for being able to create apps with an AI interface. But how are you using Retool? What was its unique role in your process?
Yeah, so Retool is interesting. It's Retool, I think they promote themselves as a platform for creating internal tools within your company. So the essentially what I used Retool for was the front end of the project and the UX and all of that good stuff. And the kind of as I was explaining, like the data was really the hardest part, I would say. We're not going to be selling this app, like, or at least I have no plans to. So it's okay for us to not have some crazy amount of work put into the front end. What Retool allows you to do is build interfaces, connect them to your existing data, and then you can do stuff with it. Like, you know, a button that when you click it, it updates some data in your database, or it sends an API call to some other software. And Retool is really great. We actually use it for a bunch of different things in our company. But the reason it's so great is because it allows you to make an app very quickly, like the front end of an app.
Got it. So workflow, you'd kind of copy all your code into ChatGPT, you'd get edits, you'd paste those back in into Replit. From a testing perspective, I think there's kind of a, talk to programmers in my limited programming experience, you usually spend 70 or 80% of your time figuring out why the code you wrote isn't working as you want it to, right? Like program, like the debugging part is 90% plus oftentimes. Was that the case when you were going through this process, or did the fact that you were working with an AI model make it where you actually could spend a lot more time writing versus troubleshooting?
Yes, there was a lot of debugging time. So I would say, by the way, if I were to have to start this project over, I could probably get it done in a third of the time. I mean, because I learned so much. But one of the things at a basic level, what's great about using an AI tool is you can run some code, and if it gives you an error message, you can literally just paste the error message into the, you know, the chat box and say, fix this. And then it'll try to. Yeah. And it never gets tired either. It's great. So even when I do, it doesn't. But what I found helped a lot is sometimes you'd run into an issue that was just really hard to solve. And ultimately, the best way to get over the hump on something like that was just to have it improve the logging of what it was doing. So basically, essentially, maybe you get an error message, you paste the error message, it tries to fix it, and it still doesn't work. Then probably what I would do after that would say, okay, I need you to add more logging to this file so that we can see what's going on. And then it'll run it again. It makes it a lot more obvious then why it's breaking. But then you just paste the logs right back into the model and it will fix it for you.
Oh, that's so nice. I have spent so much time trying to Google esoteric error messages and having it print things to the screen. And yeah, that's like such a nice upgrade. Zach, how are you thinking about, you've got a team of a couple developers, you're on WooCommerce, so that makes sense. How are you thinking about getting your existing team on board with AI programming in the future? Like when I think about our company, ideally, you know, I don't have the reps you do on building a project like this, but ideally 6 months down the road, I'd love to go through something similar so I have an understanding of how it works and have our developer, of course, still be very integrated in the process and integral in the process. But instead of maybe having him do everything from scratch or me having to communicate, be able to have a situation where we have an environment on a staging platform set up. And staging environments, for people who aren't familiar, they're just kind of like sandboxes where you have your code base in a place where you can experiment with it and play with it and tweak it, and those results don't go live. And then once you have it all dialed in, then you can push it to your live site that the world sees. And so having a staging environment where I can play with things, create new features, and then when I feel pretty good about something, I can pass it off to our developer and say, hey, here's the thing I put together. Can you please QC it for me? Make sure it's not breaking other stuff. Look it over and then deploy it. That's kind of the framework I'm thinking of. How are you thinking about how this is going to look long-term with your involvement, your team's involvement, and how that looks?
Yeah. First of all, I think what you're talking about is a great idea. So I'm actually going to be doing the same thing increasingly, I would say, of just, you know, for example, our website or maybe some other critical kind of applications that we have, just getting a clone of it set up to mess around with, I think is a great idea. So as far as getting my team on board with it, that was really the reason that or one of the reasons I would say that I justified working on this project was because I want us to be a tech focused company. And we, to a large extent, we already are, and we already were. And I really wanted to try to take that to the next level as a core competency of our company. And part of that for me was really understanding, is this AI stuff hype or is it real? And like, Can you actually do something that matters? Because, you know, most of what you see posted online is somebody making a to-do list app and, oh, it only took 5 minutes, but it's not serving any purpose. So I worked on this. I was keeping my developers updated. And, you know, after it was done or close to being done, I really started to show them this stuff. I ended up getting them an O1 Pro subscription, as well as they have Cursor. It's basically unlimited budget for AI tools, in my opinion, at this point, because it was so effective and they're already using it. So I would say we're getting easily twice as much work done with the existing team right now as we used to. And they started using these tools about a month ago. So, and I wouldn't say that it's necessarily that we're getting more projects done. It's that we're getting bigger projects done in a reasonable amount of time. And frankly, projects that we probably would have been afraid to take on because they're so big. It's made an absolutely massive difference for my dev team already.
Did you have any fear talking to them about this where they think, oh, hey, Zach's trying to replace us with AI? Like, was that an issue or was it pretty obvious? Like, hey, you guys still definitely have a role, which is, I think, what makes more sense. But this is just going to help us be able to move faster, build deeper, more complex things.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit of a concern there, but part of it was, I think that I was able to show them the value. And, you know, one thing that I do quite a bit now, for example, I guess the project doesn't really matter, but, you know, we've had some stuff lately where maybe something goes wrong. And rather than sending them a message in Slack that says, hey, this broke, you need to fix it, I can send them a message in Slack that said, hey, this broke and here is how you fix it, you know, but I'll just send them a link to the chat from ChatGPT. And I think I do this so much that I think they started to realize like, holy smokes, this is actually really good. You know, it's telling me literally exactly how to fix it. So I think it didn't take a lot of those instances before they became true believers in the power of this. So I think for them, it's a great career opportunity to be on the cutting edge of these tools because they are good developers to begin with.
A very geeky question coming inbound. Apologies to people listening. On the API front, so APIs are tools that are kind of standardized ways to letting different programs or platforms talk to each other. Was the API programming between those different tools made much simpler? Like, was it fairly straightforward to be able to program those connections between apps with the AI? Was it good enough to be able to understand the syntax and store, you know, the API keys and make that work? Or was that a pain point in this process?
I would say it's for sure good enough. But one of the things to keep in mind with that part would be for APIs, a lot of times so let's say ChatGPT, it might not know something like the Finale inventory API very well. So if you ask that I need you to connect this to that using this API, it may not be able to answer that super well unless you paste in the API documentation, but that's not that hard to do. So I would basically, if you give it the documentation, say you're trying to connect two different softwares to each other or something, you give the documentation from both of those softwares, which one thing I didn't mention, O1 Pro can handle something like 200 pages, roughly, maybe even, actually, I don't know if I've quite figured this out. It's over 200. It might be as much as 300 or 400 pages, depending on what you're pasting in there. So most API documentation might only be 5 pages. So, you know, just paste it all in there and say, hey, here it is, you know, make this work. And it'll probably get it right in the first try.
Zach, as we start kind of wrapping up here, for people thinking about embarking on something like this, what suggestions would you have for people? And like, you know, you mentioned, for example, you could probably do it in a third the time. And a lot of that is just for anyone, they're gonna have to go through and get the experience themselves. Any thoughts on particular areas people can kind of cut the learning curve down and or any tools that you've tried and would recommend to folks?
The thing that I told to my dev team that I think is a mindset shift for people, especially if they've already been using ChatGPT or something, is say you're going to do a project and it's going to take you 40 hours to get it done. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, but let's just say that it's a 40-hour project. You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that you spend 2 minutes prompting for the project. You might want to spend 4 hours, or, you know, if you're going to spend 40, maybe you should spend 10% of your time upfront really defining what you're trying to get done. Because from talking with my developers, what we kind of have talked about is how what you're dealing with is a very intelligent tool but it doesn't know anything about your company and it doesn't know anything about what you're trying to get done. It only knows if you tell it, which is kind of obvious. But I would say that would be the biggest thing that I think I see a lot of people do incorrectly is they think they can just write one sentence and get an app. And I don't think it's that simple. So, I mean, I don't think it would have worked for me. So that maybe that would be one thing is just thinking about it that way is that it's a very smart tool, but you need to give it a lot of context for it to know how to do things correctly. So that'd be one. I would say the other one would just be, you know, after you've defined what you're trying to do, just pick a small chunk of it and try to start working on it. Because, you know, once you have some existing code, I think it's a lot easier. It almost gets easier as you have more code because the AI tool can kind of now start tweaking it, adding features. It can look at what you've done already and understand the project a little bit easier. So I'd say just literally getting code on the page is kind of what you're shooting for at the beginning and, you know, making sure that it works, but you got to start somewhere. The other thing, maybe more technical thing I would recommend, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of GitHub or Git. It's basically version control for software. You're definitely going to want to set that up because what it would allow you to do is if for some reason you screw something up, you can roll it back. So a friend of mine helped me set that up. It was not hard. I probably could have figured it out myself, but I was intimidated by it. And I'm really glad that he did because before that, I had a lot of instances where I screwed something up and then I had to go figure out what went wrong. Whereas you could have just clicked a button and just rolled it back. And when he showed it to me, it became like magic. I was like, oh, really? You can just do that? That's amazing. So yeah, definitely a tool that you would want to start using at the beginning. And that would have saved me quite a bit of time.
GitHub is fantastic. I used to use that kind of a quasi-regular amount. And one of the things too that it does, you can think of it almost like revision history in Google Docs, right? Like you're typing and writing and go back to something you had, you know, an hour or 5 hours before. But why it's even more important in programming is because oftentimes there's these, in programming, sometimes you want to just start trying to create something really cool. And there's tends to be, sometimes when you do that, you start just programming like crazy, you break other things and then you have to go back and fix them. And so it gives you this ability to kind of go hog wild without fear of totally messing up your code in a way that you otherwise don't have, which is nice.
Exactly. And I think one of the things I've found kind of funny on Twitter, people now talk about vibe coding, where they just like almost just have cursor do everything and don't even think about it, you know, just kind of give it some suggestions and let it run with what it's doing. Well, I mean, that's great, but you would for sure want to have some version control because maybe you actually, maybe it's completely screws up your project. You know, I'll actually mention one more thing, a bonus tip on that. There's a software, it's in beta, technically, it's called Repo Prompt, so R-E-P-O Prompt. And what it does is it allows you, it's pretty cool. Basically, what it does is you can download GitHub Repo. So for those of us that are on WordPress, maybe that would be a plugin or something, because most of those, the code is all kind of public. You can download the repo, and then it will essentially put all the files into a prompt for you so that you don't have to do the stuff like I was talking about where you make a script that kind of helps you prompt them or whatever. The repo prompt, it does a bunch of other things too that are pretty cool. I won't get into all of that, but I found that tool to be really useful. The guy who made it, he essentially made it for himself and it ended up being good enough that I think he's going to start selling it soon.
Zach, how are you thinking about the future of this? So, I mean, a lot of SaaS is probably next to payroll and maybe COGS, one of the biggest line items, if not the third biggest in a lot of e-commerce sellers, P&L. There's the temptation people could think of to, hey, I'm going to use these technologies to replace most of my SaaS tools, half my SaaS tools. Apart from maybe like replacing Shopify or WooCommerce or something like that, your primary cart, that's an initial reaction. There's also some downsides to that, you know, trying to keep up with integrations, maintenance. There's a reason SaaS companies exist and we pay for them. How are you thinking about using this in the future? What do you want to develop? What are you going to keep paying SaaS for? What's your thought there?
Yeah, that's a tough one, but I would say all of the SaaS, or at least almost all of the SaaS that we pay for in my company, I feel like we're getting a good value on it. And an example would be something like Slack. So we use Slack in our company. I mean, to rebuild that would be very difficult. And, you know, sure, you could make something that was kind of like Slack and kind of did what Slack did, but it's a, you know, there's a reason why so many people use it. I would not try to build that to save money, even though we do spend a decent amount of money on it. I think the things that were that are at risk, in my opinion, at least within my company, would be anything that would maybe qualify as like enterprise software. Things like, I mean, frankly, like the one that I built, a lot of the reason why that pushed me to use AI is I'm very anti long-term contracts on software. I just don't like it. I believe that I should pay month to month. And if they won't do it, I pretty much will always say no, unless I absolutely need it. And, you know, so those types of things I think are at risk, in my opinion. Things that are like maybe more trivial, where it really only does one thing. I guess I don't know what those would necessarily be, but, you know, if I see one, I'll know it, I guess. But and typically we a lot of times we build those in-house anyway. And then I guess the one that I'm most excited about, though, would be building more tools for us to use internally. I guess I'm a big believer in making our internal processes more efficient with software. And that could be everything from listing a product on our website and all that goes into that, you know, making an email marketing message to, you know, on the operations side, there's just tons of things, everything from purchasing to, you know, receiving, shipping. There's a lot of things that we could do to optimize those processes. And one thing that I did recently was just brainstorm for a couple hours and came up with like 40 different things that we could do within our company. Now, obviously, we probably won't do them all, but I think that there's some potentially big opportunity to streamline our internal workflows.
Yeah. What you think about, I know there are people in e-commerce field who have built their own shopping carts, some who have even built their own like custom ERPs. And I always used to think like, that's insanity. Like just such a huge lift in a maintenance, you know, kind of obligation ongoing. But when you think about like, if AI is going to make this 50%, 60, 70% easier, maybe even, you know, 3 to 4x easier, all of a sudden, if you do an 80-20 and you're like, okay, we could pay for NetSuite and we could pay for them, you know, I don't know what they're $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for 5 years locked in, $200K, $300K. Your opportunity cost, of course, you know, and the opportunity savings goes way up and you can build it exactly for how you want it, integrated with exactly your business case. To me, especially if you focus on like the 20% of features that are the most important to you, that becomes much more compelling. I think you're going to see, that seems like one of the areas that would be ripest for developing your own stuff.
I agree 100%. I think I would not want to be an ERP company right now, especially any of them that don't have good reputations. That being said, I do think it would be very difficult to make an ERP currently, but even just this morning, a new AI model released. So I think if you fast forward 6 months from now, who knows, it may not be as difficult or out of reach as it seems now.
Yeah, it's going to be so interesting for e-commerce or any kind of small to medium-sized company. Also, I think if you're in the SaaS world, like it's such an interesting time to be able to create very niche products because the cost to create custom software to serve a market is effectively going down by 50 to 70 to 80%, right? So you're able to create very niche products that serve very niche people. And also create, it's an exciting time to be an entrepreneur in e-commerce, but also in SaaS. Like Rob Walling, he's very well known in that space and kind of works with independent founders. It's kind of like e-commerce fuel for SaaS developers, except he's the OG and he's been around doing it longer than I have and better. If I was in that world, I would be just like gleefully dancing around because it's just such a cool time to be doing neat things with small teams for niche businesses. I love it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Even things like WordPress plugins and just, you know, Shopify apps, all this different stuff. I think it would be a great time to be a Shopify app developer because I'm sure I haven't tried it. We're not on Shopify, but I have to imagine that that would be a really great use case. And, you know, I would say when I was on Shopify a long time ago, that was one of those things where you would start paying $20 for this app that does one little thing, you know, $50 for this one that does another little thing. And a lot of those would be really easy to build. Honestly, like that would be, if somebody was on Shopify and they had an app idea, that would really be a great place to start, in my opinion.
Yeah. So the super expensive, simple things, the wildly expensive ERPs, maybe the middle is safe for now, especially if you're not price gouging, but it'll be an interesting time for software. Zach, last thing I got to ask you before we wrap up here, you're getting ready to take a pretty epic trip with your family in the next couple of weeks here. Tell people more about that because it sounds amazing.
Yeah, just going to Japan, doing some skiing, doing some sightseeing, sumo wrestle. Well, we're not going to sumo wrestle, but we hope we're going to be watching it. But by the way, it turns out, Andrew, it's actually very difficult to get sumo wrestling tickets. I assumed that would be easy, but it was one of the more difficult things I've had to do. But we're doing that, and yeah, just all kinds of different stuff there. I think my kids are most probably excited to go to the Super Nintendo World that's in Universal Studios there. So we're very excited about it, and it'll just be a time to relax, unwind, spend time with the family.
That's amazing. And doing some powder skiing in Japan. Obviously, they're very well known for their powder skiing. Have you been, your kids are, I think, on a little bit on the younger side. Are they like, can your kids get out and ski powder and rip around with you?
Yeah, actually, when we went last year, we went to Switzerland, and we ended up having to go down. My son and I, my seven-year-old at the time, we accidentally took a wrong turn and ended up on the steepest it's the steepest thing I've ever skied on, and I've skied a lot, and I have a seven-year-old with me, and it's like, well, the only way is down, so we're going, bud. And it took us like a half hour to get down it, but he made it, and man, that was so cool. Like, he was so confident after that. It was pretty fun.
Oh, good for him. Yeah, that's the only way to get better at anything, right, is doing stuff that scares you a little bit and challenges you. And you mentioned too, Switzerland, that when you did that trip, you know, you were within, I don't know, you said like 100 feet of your kids for like 2 weeks straight. Talk about that just a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, we're staying in hotels, and we went various different places beyond the skiing, but I just thought it was great to, you know, I mean, the reality is I work a lot. I like working, you know, I spend a lot of time with my kids, but it's different than just being completely unplugged and just being with them constantly. And we just had so much fun as a family. You know, I felt very good when I got back, very connected as a family. And I think we all felt that way. It was just, and great memories too, you know, for the kids and for me.
That's amazing. Well, have a great time skiing in Japan, and the rest of your Asia trip sounds really fun. And if you are listening and in need of any firearm equipment or want to check it out, it's at3tactical.com. That's the letter A, the letter T as in Tom, the number 3tactical.com. And Zach is also going to be increasingly talking about business, AI, programming, how sick the powder was in Japan over on Twitter or X. And his handle over there is @ZachPlansky. So that's @ZACPLANSKY.
You know, even if people don't want to, if people like gun YouTube channels, we've been putting quite a bit into ours, and we just passed 100,000 subscribers, which is pretty exciting recently. So AT3 Tactical is our YouTube as well.
AT3 Tactical for YouTube. Interesting. How long have you been working away at that, building that channel?
We started about, well, I'd made a couple of really horrible videos myself a long time ago, but we hired a couple of employees specifically for the YouTube channel about 2 years ago, and we just crossed 100K. It's subscribers isn't really the right metric, but definitely YouTube has been a big deal for our company, and it's been great for us. The interesting part about it is, you have a bit of a cold start problem because you know, at first you don't have a lot of people watching them, but then it kind of starts compounding as you keep publishing. And we basically do 1.5 videos a week. So one a week plus one every other week currently, but we're going to start doing more soon.
Maybe to do another episode on that one, on the YouTube front. Zach, thank you. It's so cool what you've built. Like I said at the top, you inspired me to do stuff. I will try not to hassle you with endless questions when I'm, you know, in the middle of this programming at, you know, 11:30 at night.
I'm glad to help, Andrew. And by the way, hey, thank you for the e-commerce fuel forum. I love it. I've been in it for a long time. I always get a lot of good stuff out of it, and I've met some great people.
Well, thank you, man. You've been, like I said, a phenomenal member, and it's my pleasure. So we're looking forward to geeking out in person, hopefully at some point in the near future, and happy AI programming. Excited to see what you build next.
Thanks, Andrew.
Forging what matters. A lot of people really love fall, especially in the northern climates. The leaves start to change. There's a crispness in the air. It's kind of an invigorating time. There's a lot of natural beauty. I hated fall for a decade plus. In particular, when I would be driving by the football stadium or the high school, and I would start to see people out, the teams out practicing in, you know, late to mid-August, I would get this pit in my stomach because it was a signal that winter was coming. And I always never loved winter, or at least I had kind of a love-hate relationship with it. But man, when I was probably, you know, in my early 30s, a sense of dread about winter and getting through the winters hit me really hard. I remember one time, one morning I woke up and it had just snowed. And I just felt like all of the ambition and passion and excitement for life drained away from me. And I wished I didn't have to exist and get through the day. And there was a time where one trip in particular, we got out of town for the winter and went to California for a couple of weeks to get some sun. And my wife was a little bit shell-shocked after a couple of days, Annie. And she said, you've changed into a completely different person in 48 hours with the sun. She said, I think we might need to move. And that precipitated this big move where we moved from Montana to Tucson. And I think, you know, it's February right now on the long end of, you know, kind of the tail end of winter. And a lot of people struggle with this. I've never been diagnosed with any kind of seasonal affective disorder, but I would be shocked if I didn't have some version of it. And spent the last 6 years in Tucson, but this year with the gap year, which I've talked about, I have spent a meaningful amount of time, multiple months back to back in Montana. And I don't want to say I have been cured of this. It's still something that that affects me, but it has been dramatically better than it has in the past. And so for anyone thinking, you know, it might be in the same boat, I wanted to share a few things I think have helped and just thoughts and reflections on this. I think the biggest thing I think it's important to say is the phase in life that you have has such a massive impact on how the winters go. At least they did for me. Like when this hit hardest for me, we had just had our second daughter. We had two kids, was working a business. 30s was hard. I want to talk about this later. I think 30s is probably the hardest decade. You are professionally still trying to build something meaningful. A lot of people are starting to have families, and you're just stretched so incredibly thin. You haven't necessarily built up a meaningful amount of financial cushion. It is a really hard time. And layer that on top of short days, cold temperatures, being inside, and it's just a pressure cooker. So I think it's important to note, like, winter blues, seasonal affectives, or whatever it is, are really compounded when other stuff in your life is hard. And so if you're really struggling with that, I don't know if it's much soulless to say it's going to get better when things even out. But I think for me, that was a big part of it. I look at, I'm sure you've probably heard the saying, there's no bad weather, there's just bad clothing. And I look back at the stuff I was wearing and just want to slap myself across the face. I don't know what I was thinking. I would walk around in tennis shoes with soggy feet all the time throughout the winter. I'd have kind of wimpy jackets and I was always cold. And investing in, my wife bought me these muck boots that are just phenomenal. I have zero fashion sense now, but I am dry and warm and winter is way better. Great trade, would highly recommend it. But from everything to jackets, to gloves, to boots, drop $500, get some really good clothing and your quality of life will go up at least 20% in the wintertime. Speaking of being warm, Over the last probably a year and a half, put on about 15 pounds of healthy weight. Previously, I was a really skinny guy. And I feel it is shocking how less cold I am. So if you're on the very skinny end of the spectrum, you want to do this in a healthy way, but might be worth thinking about how to potentially put on a few pounds, and blew me away how much warmer I was. Conveniences. Bought a vehicle with a great heater and a remote start and a snowblower. And apart from my wedding ring that I bought for my wife, I think might be the best money I have ever spent. Again, this is kind of silly, but spending the money and actually taking the plunge on some of these small conveniences makes winter so much better. If you can get out of Dodge, I know it's not possible for everyone to do, but if you can get out for even a week or two as a reset to get some sun, to break up that winter, it's incredibly helpful. We did that a lot when I was really struggling. Even this year, being back, took a quick 3 or 4 day trip down to Tucson to get a little bit of sun and was surprised at how much it gives you back in the tank. Having rituals. One, this is a big one, and a shout out to Rex Bledsoe in the ECF community for putting me on this. But my wife and I bought each other an espresso machine. Never been like huge espresso people or love coffee, but was always very happy with just regular drip coffee and hope to still continue to be someone who can always happily drink that without being too pretentious about things. But we bought this espresso maker and It has been shockingly motivating in the morning when it is cold and dark and I don't want to get out of bed to have something warm and delicious to look forward to when I go downstairs. Maybe it's espresso for you, maybe it's something else, but to have a ritual that you enjoy and look forward to when it's dark and cold. I also do something called boy time with my son. He's 7 years old, and we'll get together, sit by the fire, we'll talk about stuff, we'll drink coffee, or I'll make him some, you know, like a steamer. And that's also something. So if you can find some kind of great ritual in the morning that helps you get up, that helps a ton. And then finally, sports. I, for the first time since college, have been able to get outside and actually ski. I would not recommend this. I picked a college based on who would actually not charge me an arm and a leg and where the skiing was highly rated. The quality of the programs was really not that important. It needed to be accredited, but that was about it. And so I came to Bozeman, had an amazing time skiing, hitchhiking up to Bridger Bowl, skipping class. Grades definitely suffered the first couple of years. But since then, between working and building a business and having a family, have not had a solid year to get out there, and actually getting a chance this year to get up and ski. And has been phenomenal. It actually makes, you know, when it snows, gives you a little silver lining there, which is wonderful. So for you, you know, whether, you know, maybe if you're in sports, try to get into something, you know, hockey, curling, whatever it is. If you're not into sports or you're in an area of the country, you know, if you're in Des Moines, there's not skiing. Actually, we're skiing in Des Moines. Shout out Des Moines. Realized that recently. But in a place where you don't have that, find something that keeps you active. Landscape photography, frozen ice yoga, whatever it is, get yourself outside. Get a hobby that you can actually leverage and enjoy in the winter. So again, it's February. Winter's close to over unless you live in Montana. And then there's probably at least another 2 or 3 months. But to those of you struggling through, I see you. It's tough. Hang in there and spend some coin to upgrade your winter game. It is worth it. Get some rituals. Get out of Dodge and hope, really hope, that the rest of the winter is just a touch better for you. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.